You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
It's time for Make the Call, a weekly discussion on the top Wisconsin sports stories of the week. You can listen to the show anytime on the free Civic Media app. Download it now on your device's app store or at civicmedia.us/app. Now, it's time for Make the Call, a Civic Media sports production.
Indeed, another Saturday morning here on Make the Call, part of the Civic Media Sports Empire. I'm Jimmy Cuska. Thank you for joining us for another edition of Make the Call. A lot coming up on the show today. Going to talk Badgers with Jake Kokorowski of Badger Observer and preview the Division III Football National Championship tomorrow night with Pat Coleman of D3Football.com. We're going to hear later in the show from him. But right now, we welcome in our roundtable and our panel as we will work through our first segment, our top seven at seven. And before we get to it, we'll introduce everybody, part of the panel. We'll start with Conrad in Green Bay. Conrad, what's up?
Well, it's going good. I just heard that I have a great hairline, so I'm happy now.
Well, it's always good to feel confident going into the new year. Gray Gunderson in Park Falls. Gray, what's up, man?
Having a great time because now we got to look at the hairline, but now he's kind of, we can see him from the nose up. So I'm thinking he's about to give us a howdy neighbor. I'm thinking we've got a Wilson here now.
Love it. And that brings us to Parker Olson in Madison. Parker, how's it going?
Doing well. My favorite thing to talk about radio is visual things because that's the best radio.
We are going to get right into things with our 7 at 7 before we make way for a Mike Clemens sports update. And I will start. What's been the best college football bowl game so far? I'll start with mine. I am always a big fan of the Pop-Tart Bowl. I don't care who wins or who's in it. I'm just there for the ritualistic sacrifice of a giant Pop-Tart.
That's a fair point, Jimmy. I'm gonna flip the coin over, though, and go to a very particular game. I'm thinking about the Pop-Tart Bowl as I watch other games. Like, that is the most whimsical game by far with those helmet stripes. But something happened in a particular game. It was the Music City Bowl. I don't know if you guys saw what Luke Altmyer pulled off as the quarterback for the Illini in his last game, but he did the exact same that he did in his first game. I've never seen this before. Go back to September of 2023. Luke Altmyer plays his first game for the Illinois. They finish with a 64-yard drive, a 29-yard field goal, and a 30-28 win over Toledo. This game a couple days ago, they won over Tennessee, 64-yard drive, 29-yard field goal as time expired, 30-28 win. Perfect bookends for Luke Altmyer's career in the University of Illinois. That's just straight up weird.
I'm going to say mine is the Orange Bowl because I just enjoy seeing Ohio State lose. That's it.
Yeah, that is a very good point. I was going to go with Sugar Bowl because that was the bowl game that actually I've like delivered to be what it should be for the playoff. But yeah, I mean, Ohio State losing, what's wrong with that? Nothing.
There you go. Bowl game wrap up from our panel. Let's move up to number six in the top seven at seven. And this is very important on the third day of the new year. Have you broken your New Year's resolution yet? And I will lead you by saying I was limiting myself to one caffeine a day. It is what, 7:08 in the morning, and I am on caffeine number two. How about you guys?
That's a tough one, though. That's such a tough one. Like, that's whether you meant to or not, that's kind of a cold turkey setup. And I'm like, I'm trying to ease into not agreeing to plans that I don't actually want to agree to. You know, like, I'm trying not to do that millennial thing where I don't say no when I really want to. And it's because I always say yes before I plan when that time is coming from. Like, that's probably my relaxation that I'm just going to give to you because I can't say no. What about you, Conrad?
Yeah, my resolution is just to make food at home more, not order in or anything. So far, so good. 3 days up, been making dinner myself. So
362 days to go on that one.
There you go. Yeah, I'm in the camp that you can't break what you don't have. So no resolutions for me. It's only up from here.
Number five, top seven at seven. The Bucks. The question is, will they make a major move?
Yeah, I don't think in the next couple months they're going to make a move, to be honest. I think with Giannis in, they have a bit of a chance here. With Giannis out, if he doesn't stay healthy, maybe I could see him training someone. But right now, I think they're trying to just get some good basketball going again. And so far they have, I think they won the last three out of five games or something like that. So I don't expect it.
And it kind of leaves them on rough footing because they've got multiple problems they need to address. Like, do you focus on trying to keep Giannis there or do you cultivate your young talent? And is Ryan Rollins real is still a question, putting good work in off the bench. But when his best work was put in against a team that was, I think the Pacers were like 6-24 when Ryan was out there looking good, it's like, okay, where do we even focus? That's my question, is what do you even address?
Number four in our top seven at seven is a college basketball question. Will the Wisconsin Badgers be an 8 seed or higher in the NCAA tournament? Keep in mind, currently undefeated at home, but have struggled against some of the top competition on the slate. They get Purdue today. So we will start with Parker on this question.
Yeah, I've really have a hard time seeing the Badgers get it together enough to be, man, 8 seed is a really good cut line there, Jimmy. I would say they're probably going to be below an 8 seed just because the Big Ten, I think, is filled with a bunch of teams that are of the type that we have seen beat the Badgers already. And I think it's going to be pretty tough for them to have a more than quality year. We'll put it that way. I think they'll be okay in the Big Ten, but I don't think they'll exactly be special. Maybe we'll get a late season run like we have in previous years.
No, I think the Badgers could get to like a 6 seed or something. That's only if, it's early still. March Madness is still a little bit away, but I'm saying if they create an identity for themselves defensively, they could potentially be a 4 or 3. I think the offense is great. But when the defense is bad, it's horrible, and we let them score. So I'm thinking 6 or 5 right now.
Number three in the top seven at seven, and we'll talk more about this coming up in our roundtable segment. And this is the Packers question. Who would you prefer to see in the playoffs, the Bears or the Eagles? And I'm going to go right back to you, Conrad.
You know, I mean, the Bears are rolling. I mean, their offense looks great. Their defense is okay right now. The Eagles, you know, they've been losing some games, but the last game I think that they had where they just won by a lot, it was kind of like a morale booster for them. So I don't think I want to see the Eagles right now. I would rather play the Bears.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. I think I like the matchup with the Bears a little bit more, I think. Being more familiar with each other. But also the Packers, I think they find another gear against the Bears, I think it's fair to say. So We could be in for a fun one down in Chicago.
Number two in our top seven at seven is just another Milwaukee Bucks question. Do you think the Bucks will make the playoffs? Remember, top 10 teams in each conference make the postseason.
I think they'll make the play-in tournament. They always seem scrappy towards the end of the year and fighting their way to get into something. And I think potentially 9 or 8 seed, I think they could crawl their way back to it. But it all depends on Giannis. That's it.
And that brings us to our number one in our top seven at seven. We're going to go through our Packers-Vikings predictions together, and we're going to toss this over to Gray to start us off. Gray.
Some ugly quarterback play. That's going to be my prime prediction for this coming Sunday. The Packers just signed Desmond Ridder to their practice squad. That's a name synonymous with trouble, I'm afraid. I like the guy. I really want to like him, but he doesn't go and win games on teams. So, I'm thinking bad quarterback play. Brian Flores is going to put on a show, and Jeff Hafley will set our expectations for the postseason. There we go.
I'm going to say, we just signed Trayvon Diggs, and I'm really happy about it, you know?
We're going to hear about that later, I'm thinking. Hugger, right? We're going to hear a lot more about him.
No, he's got a perfect passer rating allowed this season that we needed him, and we did need him. That's terrifying.
I'm just, he's going to have an interception, Max is throwing a pick to him.
And
that's my prediction.
That pick will be our Super Bowl. Parker, what kind of optimism do you have?
Optimism. That's a word we can use right now. I'm going to say we're going to see a lot of bad on bad on Sunday. How about that? Yeah.
I call them slap fights, Jimmy. That's what I'm expecting.
We'll talk more about the Packers and the Vikings and the postseason coming up in a bit. But right now, we get out of the way for a bit of a Packers preview, but also a sports update from Mike Clemens here on Make the Call, part of the Civic Media Sports Network.
Bucks pull out a win. Good morning. I'm Mike Clemens with sports. NBA, the Bucks needed a win at home and pulled one out with just 4 seconds left on the clock. They beat the Charlotte Hornets 122-121 thanks to a dunk shot by Giannis Antetokounmpo after a perfect pass from Kevin Porter Jr., who says he appreciates his growing role with the team.
Yeah, it means a lot. I know they trust me. They've seen some moments prior that I was able to come in clutch, but I think tonight, you know, how the game was going individually for myself, for them to still go to me, it definitely is a confidence booster and, you know, shows how we trust each other.
Bucks head coach Doc Rivers after the victory.
The execution was phenomenal. I was pissed, obviously, because we ran a hammer action for A.J. Green, and he clearly got fouled on the head on the play. Mello was dying laughing because he knew he got away with one. And then we got him another three, and he hit him again. You know, and it was a no call. It was almost like, well, I got away with the first one. So, I mean, that's 6 points, guys, in the last 3.5 minutes. That's hard to recover from. What I liked about the game, though, we never had control of the game throughout the game. They made shots. They beat us to the ball a bunch. But it's one of those games where a lot of teams would have let go of the rope. And I thought we just hung in there, and then won the game. So really proud of our guys tonight.
So the Bucks head out for a 4-game road trip that begins tomorrow night in Sacramento against the Kings. Game time, 8 p.m. Men's college basketball, an important game tonight for Wisconsin. They host the Purdue Boilermakers, ranked 5th in the nation. At a press conference yesterday in Madison, head coach Greg Gard was asked,
"Where do you feel like there's still the most room to grow defensively for this group?"
I think always consistency in transition. I think that's always when you want to get your, when you're building a defense, you want to make sure you're good in transition and get your defense set. So I think that's always at the top of the priority list. You want to be better in transition. And some of that is the result of what happens on the other end. There's a lot of cause and effect. You know, live ball turnovers, bad shots, that type of stuff will really strain your transition defense. You're getting to the free throw line, you're taking good shots, your floor is balanced when you shoot it, then you're apt to, you know, transition a little bit better. So that's always probably the first priority, is to make sure we can set our defense, and that's an ongoing challenge. It's never good enough because it's not going to stay there, right? It's going to continue to ebb and flow, and you want to make sure you get set as many possessions as you can.
It's the Badgers and Purdue tonight at the Kohl Center. Tip off at 7 p.m. In Green Bay, the Packers will hold a final walkthrough later this morning before a quick flight this afternoon to Minneapolis. They'll play the Vikings tomorrow at noon at U.S. Bank Stadium. It's been a busy week of roster changes for the Pack as they prepare for the postseason next week, with either a matchup against the Eagles in Philly or the Bears in Chicago, depending on what happens to those two teams this weekend. The Packers will add defensive back Trevon Diggs, the 27-year-old Pro Bowler who was released by the Cowboys on Tuesday. Diggs says after his agent called him and told him he was being signed by Green Bay, he says his next phone call was immediately to one of his best friends, Micah Parsons. The two had been teammates in Dallas the past 4 years. What did Parsons say the move to Green Bay would be like?
He told me, you know, it's work. It's a lot different. You know, he said, "I'm going to like it a lot and I'm going to enjoy it." And so far, I've been enjoying it a lot. My first day was out there today and, you know, I had a lot of fun. And, you know, it's a great, great thing to be here.
You want to play Sunday? Can you play Sunday?
Yeah.
His new locker is right next to his teammate from college, safety Xavier McKinney. The two played together at Alabama, and the Packers' secondary coach, Derek Ainsley, was their coach at the Crimson Tide. So will they be able to get Diggs ready to play by tomorrow against the Vikings? I asked Packers defensive coordinator Jeff Hafley.
Yeah, good question. You know, there's some that will say it's the easiest position to come in and play. If you just kind of look at it and say, tell the guy to cover a guy in man-to-man coverage and tell a guy to play three deep or tell a guy to play a cloud. But at the same time, I mean, there's adjustments, right? Who you're working with in man coverage. If my man motions, do I run with them? Do I bump the coverage? How do you play it here? How'd you play it in Dallas? How do you play three deep here? Is it a three deep where you're really playing more like a matchup man, or you're reading 2-1 and trying to match routes that way? How are you handling motions? How are you handling, you know, nub side run game? Where are you fitting in the run game? So to the outsiders and to some other people, it's probably the easiest one. I still think there's a level of difficulty, but saying that, it's our job to make sure that he is ready to play. So we need to spend a ton of time with him, which DA is probably doing right now, and we need to get him ready.
That's the Packers defensive coordinator, Jeff Hafley. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to Make the Call on Civic Media.
It is Make the Call on Civic Media's Sports Network, and we'll be joined by the full roundtable again here in about 10 minutes. Coming up later in the show, Pat Coleman of D3 Football will preview UW-River Falls and North Central in the Division III National Football Championship. That airs tomorrow night on St. Croix Country, WSCM, and on the free Civic Media app. Right now, though, talking college sports of the Wisconsin Badgers variety with Jake Kokorowski of BadgerObserver.com. Happy New Year, Jake.
Happy New Year, man. Yeah, it's always great. And gosh, there's New Year brings new tidings, obviously good hope, good expectations, but obviously a lot of change, both football and volleyball. And it's been quite the crazy start so far.
Yeah, 2025, a very interesting year in Badgerland. And now this year we begin anew, and that sort of really starts tonight with Badger Spence Pooch taking on Purdue. They get back to Big Ten play with a couple of home games. Badgers are 8-0 at home this year. Obviously the schedule has had a couple of hiccups in it, but tonight against Purdue should be a pretty good measuring stick of where things are kind of at here at about the 1/3 point of the season, right?
Right, yeah, and this is if Wisconsin's looking for a win to really solidify themselves and do something along those lines of hey, like, yeah, we know we haven't performed well against teams that could be considered quad one victories, right? Or, you know, you've seen any time it hasn't been, long story short, they just have not played well against good competition so far. And so I think with Wisconsin, this is their time to really assert themselves and show what they can do. And what better team than Purdue, where they're shooting over 50% as a team, they're hitting almost 40% of their three-pointers and whatnot, and they're out rebounding, like every Matt Painter team seems like they out rebound teams by a vast margin, and they have four players in double-digit scoring average, and obviously Braden Smith's leading the nation, by the way, in assists with almost 10 per game. It's like 9.5. So it's going to be a very tough challenge for Wisconsin in my eyes, but it's one also that, hey, you're at home, you're at the Kohl Center, you're revving back up Big Ten play after going 1-1, a good win, a blowout win against Northwestern, and then unfortunately being blown out on the road in Lincoln against a very good Nebraska squad. This is a chance for Wisconsin to show the improvements that they've made in the past two games. And Greg Gard liked what he saw from defense earlier this week against Milwaukee. So now it's going to be, can Wisconsin continue those strides on defense, which they're going to absolutely need to do against this Purdue team. But also, hey, can they make a three-pointer? Because I think it was like 3 for 28. That's not going to cut it or was it 4 of 22? I think it was. Either way. Not a good 3-point percentage against Milwaukee earlier this week, and they need to score from deep by the vast amount of shots they take from beyond the arc.
Talking to Jake Kokorowski of Badger Observer and BadgerObserver.com. You want to get insights on the Badgers delivered right to you? Get to BadgerObserver.com right now and sign up to get his regular newsletters and articles delivered right to you. Last night, before I'm doom scrolling before bed, I'm looking at it right now here on a Saturday morning, and it just seems like every other post is about somebody declaring that they're in the portal, they're out of the portal, they got a visit, they don't have a visit. This is madness, man. I don't know how you keep track of it with all this stuff with the transfer portal. This is insane.
It's nuts, man. And even with for those kind of going behind the curtain, on Badger Observer, one of my most read articles is just a portal tracker for college volleyball, for like the Wisconsin volleyball program. Because, within 24 or 48 hours, there are 5 or 6, players in the transfer portal from Wisconsin. And so for the volleyball program, for Kelly Sheffield, and he's had to reload. And so, really, it's the evolution of the sport, evolution of college athletics in general, and going back to football. For those that don't know, yesterday, January 2nd, was the first, day officially of the transfer portal, where it's open for 15 days through the 16th of January. This is a fact for Wisconsin where it's a big reloading year, and we've already seen, it looks like, nearly 20 players have either through various report. You talk about Twitter, and social media and Instagram, whatever social media posts. It looked like at least 18 players, maybe around there, nearing 20 that may be in the portal, depending upon what your source is. I have reached out to Wisconsin to ask for official confirmation that all these players are in the portal. And so it's tough to track because, and it's hard because you see with how football, the Division One schedule is laid out. December, this portal officially opens up in January, but in December you're seeing all these kids announce their intentions to head to the transfer portal, and so it looks really bad. Like, oh, these guys are leaving, but you know, the transfer portal has become the place where you reload or you can rebuild quickly. And so Wisconsin, you know, coming off a 4-8 year, it's tough to see, you know, and even, you know, yesterday on Friday, you know, I'm trying to reach out to, I'm not trying to write up anything because it's just, these things are so fluid. These situations about who, okay, well, they set up these visits. Well, I can tell you one player, you know, that there's a report out that they're going to take a visit. You know, I hear that now that like he's no longer taking it, that he pulled the visit. So, you know, like, so it's a tough task, and it's also, you know, it can consume you when it comes to being a reporter in this time, this day and age. But, you know, there are names to follow. There will be names to like watch, and there'll be, I think the biggest thing is watching for positions for Wisconsin. Maybe we want to talk about broadly that way. Quarterback's going to be something that's going to be talked about, you know, and not to dive too much in the weeds, but I know there have been reports about, you know, Colton Joseph, the Old Dominion quarterback, is a dual threat quarterback, you know, about him. But you're also looking at wide receivers when it comes to guys that are, yeah, you know, right now they only have 5 scholarship wide receivers that I see on a projected scholarship distribution list that I keep right now. And that includes Cash Brock, who is another 2026 wide receiver who's just announced yesterday as being part of this class. So it is an all-encompassing time for anyone that covers this sport. And you hope there is some change. And I'm on the, you know, and we can, Jimmy, we could probably do an entire podcast or entire show.
We can do the whole show on this topic. I agree with you. We can do a whole show on it. Jake, we're out of time in the segment, but I appreciate having you on board to talk things, all things Badgers. We definitely have a lot to talk about here in 2026. And as always, you'll have a lot to write about with Badger Observer and Badger Observer. Jake, thanks for your time.
Thank you, man. You take care of yourself. We'll talk soon.
All right, we'll have more Make the Call coming up right after this on Civic Media.
Welcome back to Make the Call on Civic Media.
Indeed, Make the Call here on Saturday morning across the Civic Media Sports Network. Big thanks to Jake Kokorowski in the previous segment for going through all things Badgers with us. We'll talk more college sports coming up in about 20 minutes. We'll be joined by Pat Coleman of D3Football.com to preview tomorrow night's Division III Football National Championship. UW-River Falls takes on defending champion North Central College of Naperville, Illinois. We'll have that game broadcast for you on St. Croix Country. That's WSCM.FM and on the free Civic Media app under WSCM tomorrow night. And you can, again, hear that locally in western Wisconsin on 95.7 St. Croix Country. It is our roundtable segment as part of Make the Call. We bring back our full panel of sports folks from across the company, Conrad Krieger, Parker Olson, and Greg Gunderson. How far you guys think that the Packers can go in the postseason, because they're entering as the lowest seed and they will be playing at either Chicago or Philadelphia to get things started. How far do we think the Packers go this postseason? And I'm going to start with Gray to get this discussion kicked off on the Packers and the postseason.
First off, I am a hedger. I refuse to pretend that I know what's coming. That said, there comes a time when you have to be a little bit definitive and state some expectations. I think the way they've been playing these last few weeks, Green Bay is looking at bouncing out in that first game, totally flopping in the wild card round. I don't care who they're playing. They don't look like they're capable of beating anybody right now. And the main issue is what the defense has been up to. You know, when you've got Malik Willis putting up one of the best games of the season at the quarterback position, bar none, in a 17-point loss, well, I think that tells you just how valuable somebody like Micah Parsons really was. And his name is the only one to mention. We've got to mention it because he's what's missing right now. He was doing enough work that the corner situation, this horrifying, horrifying corner situation, was enough to do the job. you can go to Walmart and get yourself a $1 mop and it's not going to do the job, but it'll do way better than your bare hands. And that's kind of basically what we've had going at the defensive back position. And it just didn't show because there wasn't enough mess on the floor in the first place to show that that mop couldn't get the job done. Well, now that Mike is not there, there's a lot of mess on the floor and it's stinky stuff and things that you don't even want to imagine. And Keyshawn Nixon ain't doing nothing about it. And that is my overriding thing. Can the defense do anything? Is Jeff Hafley capable of turning chicken into chicken salad? I know you know exactly what I mean. I mean, Parker, I know you watch this and you're a smiling head shaker like myself. What are you most cynical about? What are you scared you're going to see this weekend?
Well, you made me smile when I'm going to go and say that you called Trayvon Diggs a $1 mop from Walmart, which I think is awesome.
He's so good at what he does compared to me. Like, I can't pretend I would ever replace him. But like, if you're going to take a bicycle and one of the wheels is a square, I'm going to be like, hey, not an engineer, still qualified to point out that ain't going to work, though. And I use that analogy too much. I think that's my position, is like that. Just even I can smell this from here.
I mean, it's totally fair. Yeah, no, the Packers are in quite possibly the worst spot that I can remember, actually. I don't remember a time, really, and maybe I'm just not thinking hard enough, but I can't think of a time when the Packers were in such a dire need for help anywhere, really. Like,
It was about 2016. You remember when Julio Jones and the Falcons were coming to town and the starting corner that week was Ladarius Gunter? Do you remember that name?
Oh God, I remember that.
That was the game that I called the unstoppable force meeting the movable object. And that's kind of what it's going to look like in the playoffs and I don't want to underestimate the value of putting a new player on a new team. Diggs may be better in Green Bay than he was in Dallas, but when you've got six picks on a season and they're still throwing at you enough that you get a seventh, cool, you got your seventh pick, but dude, they're still throwing at you. Conrad, you like Diggs. Do you think he's going to look better in Green Bay than he ever did elsewhere? Because that's what we're going to need from him to make a big difference, I think.
I mean, right now we're kind of seeing a ghost of Diggs. Like, we know what he's capable of. Like, we saw it in Dallas. I'm just hoping maybe he could get back. Maybe it's the situation he was in. Maybe he just didn't like it. Maybe he did this on purpose because he wanted to move because Mike was gone. You know, they're like best friends. So
they have been getting along.
I'm just saying it's better than some of the corners we have. I mean, Nixon's our cornerback one and he's not good. So I don't know. I'm hopeful for Diggs to just like step up, maybe be a leader on this team. Because it doesn't really seem without Micah, who's our leader? It doesn't really seem like we have one on the defensive side. I mean, last week it looked like helpless, like stopping Derrick Henry. There's every single time I was like, he's going to go for 15 yards here, probably. So against Aaron Jones here,
it's going to be hard no matter what.
Yeah. I mean, yes. Yeah. But I mean, we did see like Derrick Henry get stopped this year. Maybe it could have, but I don't know. I'm just hopeful that Diggs brings maybe a spark to this defense. Just something, because we need it.
Question for you, maybe for you, Parker. Do you guys think that the Packers defense is trending a little too small? I mean, if you look at their star position, their nickel corner, you've got guys like Javon Bullard at corner, and at safety, you've got guys like Carrington Valentine and Xavier McKinney. These are guys who, and yes, Derrick Henry is the extreme. He's like the guy who everybody bounces off of. But if we happen upon another hard to tackle running back, like if Saquon Barkley wakes up and eats his Wheaties, that might be the Packers bouncing off him like bullets off of Superman's chest. Like, do you think the current formulation of the team, even if everybody's healthy, are we too small? It's a random question, but it might matter.
I've never really put thought into that, Gray, before. I think you might be onto something there. Yeah, there definitely is. Because there's not a lot of guys that you look at beyond the line and go, that's a big dude.
Right. The linebackers are of decent size, but they're not great in coverage so far this year. Coop has been decent, but McDuffie and Quay have been more run-stopping than anything. So I think there might be a couple basic team strategies that the Packers just can't really deal with right now.
Gray, I mean, you got to consider that the Packers are one of the youngest teams in the NFL, like the last few years. So there's also a physical component to it where a lot of other teams, you know, they've got 5 or 6 years of experience at their key position. positions. A lot of the Packers guys have only been in the league for a few years, and you know, there's development and training that goes along with that. And I know that they've added some veterans, obviously bringing in Micah Parsons is a different case, but you just mentioned a whole bunch of guys in the back end, and a lot of these guys are in their first few years in the league.
You're right. I didn't even notice that, Jimmy. I just talked about a bunch of guys who aren't even on their fifth year, which sure, most careers may not make the fifth year, but when you're talking about the experience core of your team or the talent that you're relying on, well, I think we've shown one thing, or a long list of things really, that some crazy superstars on that pass rushing position can kind of make up for.
Tell me what you guys think about this. I mean, Rashawn Gary this year, why is he struggling? What do you guys think?
That's the right question to ask. Like, I could comment all day on the fact that he's struggling. He hasn't had a sack in 9 weeks. There have been over 300 pass rushers in the last 7 years that have as many snaps as he has, and he has a quarter as many quick pressures. Like, he's on a milk carton. I was talking in week six about he'll be fine, he'll be fine, he'll be fine. And since then, I think he died. But why? I don't know. Parker, do you have any idea why that might be? Because to hear the fans talk, it's just effort. It's just because he doesn't care and doesn't try. Does it look like effort to you?
No, and I really grind my gears when people say it's an effort thing. I get it. These guys are living out their dream, being professional football players. They get to play a game for a living. I never want to hear anything about effort. Although I do understand at times, like, there's probably something like that. Like this Sunday, I honestly think that there might be a low effort this Sunday, because what are we doing this for? The Packers aren't playing anything. The Vikings are done, whatever. But going back to Rashawn Gary, though, I don't know that it's an effort thing. I think that offenses, he's not really someone that, I was going to say that he's someone that the offenses try to get away from, but he's not really somebody that you try to game plan around going towards, really.
Right. Yep.
So I really don't know what that could be.
It could be a game changer. Yeah, but he's not that game breaker. So I totally agree with you. No. But I'll tell you what I want to believe. I want to believe that this is a reflection of his first year under a new defensive line assistant coach. The Packers brought in DeMarcus Covington, who was most recently with the Jared Mayo Patriots franchise. So there was a lot of speculation about what that might mean. But it's also kind of folded into the fact that it's just Jeff Hafley's second season. So I would want to believe that, except we started with good production. So is it really that he can't get it done unless somebody else absorbs a double team? Because to put that simply, that's just not getting the job done. You know, Conrad, I think you asked the perfect question, and I think the question might be the headline. Why? Why? If you know why, please go to Green Bay and contact DeMarcus Covington and tell him. Yeah, because we don't know. We don't know how, why, but please stop.
You know, I really watched him this last game, and I think maybe he doesn't train balance, because I saw him falling almost every snap when he was doing the pass rush. He was falling, and then when on the effort side, I did see him do a light jog most of the time. You know, it's like he went hard, and then, all right, he's getting away, I'm just gonna lightly jog, whatever. No effort, I don't think. I don't know.
Is there something to, well, because Micah Parsons, he is going to absolutely chase you down if you're a quarterback. He's going to chase you down if you're running out of bounds. Is there something to be said about knowing when to tap out, though? Because I played tennis, and there was a if there was a ball really short in the court, there was a difference between I think I may be able to get this ball, and there's no chance I'm going to get that ball. Like, you need to know when to tap out, when are you conserving energy, that kind of stuff. Gray, you've got a way better chance of knowing this than I do. How many snaps is Gary playing? Is it worth, I'm just not going to go after this one?
Well, so looking at this point in the season, let me just see if I can pull up that stat that I found, because it was actually recently, it was Justice Mosqueda of the Acme Packing Company website, who does an absolutely phenomenal job with breakdowns and things. And what he pointed out was that there were just shy of 400 pass rushers who have as many snaps here it is. Since 2018, there have been, and I was wrong about the numbers, I got them switched around, there have been 206 edge rushers with at least 377 pass rush snaps in a season. Among those players, the average quick pressures in a season is 24. Rashawn Gary currently sits at 6. So not only is he underperforming, he's underperforming compared to the average. He's He's a quarter of the average, not the best, not even the good. He's a quarter of the C student. So is it because of Micah? But again, Conrad, I think you nailed it. And I think it's going to leave. It's going to be left there like Excalibur, sword in the stone. Why?
We're down to our last minute or so here. And I just wanted to gather a quick thought back to where we're at with the Packers going into the postseason. I'm going to ask the question. How far do you think they go? Do they win a playoff game, guys?
They could, but they won't the way it's currently looking. Unless something changes, unless, and again, don't undervalue the new player on the new team, but Diggs isn't going to make the difference that Parsons did. They could, but I currently don't expect them to.
Is there any chance that we get a Jordan Love legacy run here? I kind of think that we might see the offense just find an absolutely new gear because we know that they're capable of that. We just haven't quite seen them firing in all cylinders. And once you see a well-rested Jordan Love here and a well-rested Josh Jacobs as well coming up here, you might just have too good of an offense to lose. So we've got a chance there. Conrad, what about you?
I'm going to say the first game is going to be a legacy game because he's a new dad, you know, just because of that. And I expect to get bounced second round fully. But I think the team knows we're injured, and I think that's just it. We're so injured. I don't know how we win in the second round or the third. You know, it's just no.
All right. There is a mix of optimism and pessimism in all of that. But the Packers do play the Vikings tomorrow. Appreciate your thoughts on the roundtable here, guys. Gray, Parker, Conrad, thank you for your time. And we'll be back here next week to see what we're talking about going into the NFL playoffs, guys.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Thanks, Jimmy. Take care.
All right. Coming up next, we preview the Division III National Football Championship game. That is UW River Falls against North Central. Pat Coleman of D3 Football joins us right after this on Make the Call, part of the Civic Media Sports Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to Make the Call on Civic Media.
Our final segment of the show, we're going back into college sports, and we're talking about a huge game coming up tomorrow night and a game you can hear on Civic Media stations on St. Croix Country WSCM and on the free Civic Media app tomorrow night. It is UW River Falls playing for their first ever national championship in football, and they'll take on North Central. And joining me to preview the game and talk about all of the coverage going into tomorrow night is Pat Coleman of D3Football.com. Pat, it's great to have you back on the show. How exciting it is that we're here, championship weekend, and hey, there's a UW school involved.
Yeah, right. It's great, I think, for the whole conference. But obviously, what a great story, right? River Falls and all of the adversity and all the struggles they've had over the years to have built this up over the past handful of seasons and get all the way to the Amos Alonzo Stag Bowl.
Well, talking to Coach Matt Walker on this show and just texting him back and forth the past several weeks, just every week I'm like, hey, man, just go get it. There's only one thing left to do now, and that's to win the whole thing, right? But you mentioned a story. This is a program that struggled even under Coach Walker for years. And then it's like a switch went off right around the COVID break when seasons were, you know, game seasons, all that were messed up. And then they come back and they win back-to-back Isthmus Bowls. And that really seemed to be kind of a catalyst for a lot of the success. They set an NCAA record in one of those Isthmus Bowls for first downs. It just seems like that was kind of a catalyst to all the success they've had now for the last few years. And now this unprecedented run to the national championship game.
Yeah. And I think if you talk to them, they flipped one particular switch intentionally. First of all, you get the opportunity to bring in Caleb Blaha, who I don't think we knew at the time, you know, him being a Division II wide receiver for a season to come in and then, you know, be a game changing quarterback at the Division III level. So you have that. And then the also intentional change of, in implementing this hurry up offense. They call it the Top Gun offense, basically with the goal of taking about 90 snaps in any particular game on offense. And if you know football, you know, that's probably maybe, 20 to 25 more than you might have in an average game. They really intentionally kind of went full force into that, became this offensive juggernaut, attracted some great wide receivers, have really good running backs, and they are now in the position where the combination of Blaha, now in his senior year, now the Gagliardi Trophy winner, the Division III version of the Heisman Trophy, they have all of those things put together, and it's gotten them as far as you can get, basically. So we'll see how that goes on Sunday night, how it wraps up.
Yeah, and not only the offense and their success, but the defense as well. There's a great feature up right now on D3Football.com written by Greg Thomas talking about the defensive impact, which I thought hit something that I think goes overlooked a little bit because we talk so much about Top Gun offense, but it just seems not only the defense and special teams too, they've really put it together all the way around in that program.
Yeah, and so if you look at the defensive numbers, you might get a bit of a misleading portrait of how that defense performs because so when you're off offense is trying to take 90 snaps a game. They're not spending a ton of time on the field, right? Your defense is on the field a long time. Johns Hopkins this past weekend in the national semifinals had 17 possessions. One of them, one play at the end of a half. So basically 16 full possessions. That's a lot of time for the defense to be on the field. So yeah, Johns Hopkins scored 41 points, right? They were successful on seven of those drives, but that meant there was an awful lot of stops that defense got also.
And that defense, by the way, caused a lot of trouble in the WIAC, which they won this year. The lone loss coming to Oshkosh, a team that plays a similar kind of hurry-up spread style on offense as well. Talking to Pat Coleman at D3Football.com, the Stag Bowl is tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. And I know that you guys have a lot of involvement in this in terms of media coverage, not only the web features, but you've also got some broadcast coverage coming up as well for this game.
Yeah, so if you're listening to this right now on the radio and you want to know more about Division III football, maybe you want to spend a little more time listening to audio. I might recommend going and finding the D3Football.com Around the Nation podcast. We dropped an edition of that from Canton on Friday afternoon, talking about pregame stuff, keys to the game, interviews with the coaches and a couple of the players from each side. And I think that's a good way to catch up with it. Also, you can read everything that you want on D3Football.com, not just the River Falls feature, but also a feature on North Central, which is River Falls' opponent out of the Chicagoland area and is the current kind of juggernaut in Division III. They've won three of the last five national championships, and they're playing in the Stag Bowl for the sixth consecutive season.
That's a good point to make. We talked so much about River Falls, we did fail to mention the opponent, but North Central hasn't lost in the regular season in, I think, like 6 years. And as you said, they've been in the championship game several years in a row. And looking at, going into this year, they've been number one, almost wire to wire, I think, in the top 25 poll. But, River Falls has ascended. It just, took some time, but they finally got themselves up into that top part of it. It just seemed like we were kind of waiting out who would emerge from that pile of really good WIAC teams. And, well, here it is, River Falls and the Top Gun offense against North Central. And, hey, this is a team that plays pretty well at offense, too, and has for years a rock-solid defense. They've got a lot going into this game as well. And even some emotional impact with the passing of a former coach of theirs.
That's right. Yeah, there's a couple of things at play here. One, yes, Jeff Thorne, who led them as head coach to their first national championship back in 2019, lost his battle with cancer earlier in the season, I guess, for lack of a better term, last month. And that's something that's certainly an emotional factor for them. Also, they've never won back-to-back championships in this little run that they've had. So I think there's and of course there's always the impetus to win a national championship in the first place. Defensively, very strong up front. Folks like JP Sullivan, Eli Rennick are going to be the people on the defensive line who are trying to get after Caleb Blaha and Asher and all the guys in the backfield. And then Rami Roby will be a name to know in the secondary, along with Jamar Daniel. Those are guys who are going to be matched up against, is it Blake Rohrer? Is it Wesolowski? Is it, any of a number of other wide receivers who've had really good seasons for River Falls?
Pat Coleman, D3Football.com. A lot of coverage coming up tomorrow. There's a video preview that'll go up on the site before the game at 5 o'clock, and then an audio broadcast as well at D3Football.com. Pat, I appreciate all of your insights into the game. Looking forward to the national championship tomorrow night.
Thanks, Jimmy. Great time of year for Division III.
Indeed, for a season that began in August, it all comes down to tomorrow night. You can hear the Stag Bowl broadcast with UW River Falls tomorrow night at 7 on WSCM, which is St. Croix Country 95.7 in western Wisconsin. A big thanks to Greg Gunderson, to Parker Olson, and to Conrad Krieger, the Roundtable, for being part of the show, Jake Kokorowski of Badger Observer, Pat Coleman of D3 Football, and of course, Mike Clemens. I'm Jimmy Cuska. This has been Make the Call.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.